Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Turbo Time podcast. I'm your host, Alyssa Espinoza, the managing editor of Turbo Machinery International. Today, we're talking about root cause analysis and the philosophies and methodologies behind it. So our experts are the Mythbusters, Klaus Brunn and Rainer Kurtz. Welcome back to you both. Happy December.
Happy December, and thanks for having us again. I'm looking forward to this very relevant topic, root cause analysis or root cause failure analysis, is something that pops up on almost a weekly basis when you design compressors or turbo machinery.
Yeah, and I'm really happy that we are invited again to discuss topics like that. So it's going to be fun.
So what is root cause analysis? What's the philosophy? And then why is it important in the turbo machinery industry?
So when we talk about root cause analysis, some people also call it RCFA, meaning root cause failure analysis. Basically, what you're looking at is something failed in your machine, something broke in your machine, you had a catastrophic failure. Sometimes it's just you're missing performance by something, but something is not exactly as you would expect it in a compressor or a gas turbine or steam turbine, and you want to try to figure out what it is. And again, this can range from the catastrophic failure where everything explodes to something as mild as, you know, you're missing performance by a percent or two. But in all of these cases, you're trying to figure out why exactly is that happening. And so you perform a root cause failure analysis. You get your symptoms, right? Your symptom is the performance is low, or your symptom is your machine just exploded. Those are the symptoms. That doesn't really tell you what the failure causes. And so there's many processes that have been developed over the years in the industry to try to figure out what the failure cause is. And that's really what it's about. And we'll talk a little bit about what these processes are. But in most cases, they start with a review of the operation of the machine that may have preceded the failure. And also in many cases with what we call a metallurgical investigation, because usually something breaks, right? And so one of the best indications as to what failed is a metallurgical investigation where it tells you then, okay, my failure was due to maybe high cycle fatigue, sudden overload, corrosion, erosion, or stuff like this. And then once you have that, then you kind of work your way out to, okay, what is your excitation that may have caused a high cycle fatigue, or what is in your process gas that may have caused corrosion or erosion? And so then you work through the different scenarios in a structured approach, so that at the end of the process, you can identify what is the failure cause. Now, every root cause failure analysis, if you take it to its absolute beginning, will always say it's a human failure, right? Which is absolutely meaningless, because you can always say, oh yeah, somebody designed it and they designed it wrong, or they picked the wrong metal and that's wrong. That's a meaningless conclusion. It needs to end up where you have something actionable, right? You need to come out of the root cause failure analysis knowing, okay, this is what was wrong and this needs to get fixed, or we're not going to do this again to avoid the failure mode. And that's maybe, and Rainer, maybe you can talk about this a little bit, but not every root cause of failure analysis will give you a very clean kind of answer as to what caused it, which is, you know, a certain amount of uncertainty in the results.
I just want to emphasize why this thing is called root cause failure analysis. The key is that you don't just look at what immediately caused the failure, but rather what are the underlying causes so that you can avoid failures like that in the future. And that's where it sometimes gets a bit fuzzy, because not every failure has a clear, okay, this is the one reason for it. It's sometimes the effect of multiple different things. And essentially, a systematic root cause failure analysis really creates a plan how you get from the immediate failure to the issues or the issue that are ultimately responsible for that failure.
Yeah, and that's kind of important, because there's actually very few failures that are contributable to a single point. Right? It's usually something else. And what's also important is that you actually dig into it and not just kind of say, okay, a blade failed. I see high cycle fatigue. My root cause is high cycle fatigue in the blade. Well, you know what? It could be because of bad manufacturing. Maybe there was a crack in the blade that was caused by some stress corrosion. But usually that is in combination with some excitation mechanism, and maybe aerodynamic excitation. It may be rotor dynamic excitation. It may be blade dynamic excitation. And you have to kind of follow and not just say, okay, yeah, that's the cause, but you really have to figure out what is it that is unusual, because what you need to eliminate is what is unusual, right? I mean, if you just say it's high cycle fatigue and then you do everything again, then we'll have another failure. And so you haven't really done anything to help yourself. So you really need to get to the point where you can identify is, what can I do about it to fix the problem? But as Rainer also stated, unfortunately, it's not always that clear. And then you have to remember Murphy's Law, right? Murphy's Law is, you know, something that can go wrong, will go wrong. And sometimes it's just you get unlucky. And so you also have to be careful not to over-constrain what you're doing because of a failure. Because very often when you have a failure and you go through the root cause failure analysis, you figure something out, and then you come up with some new rules and standards and requirements, and that can be overdone because you may end up with so many requirements that you actually end up not being able to do anything anymore.
And that's really one of the things. Without a key understanding on what happened, and again, for example, what's the likelihood of something like that happen again, it doesn't make much sense to invoke massive design changes that may impact the performance of the equipment in other areas. There is always a bit of a tendency in the industry that you have some failure, it gets discussed, a root cause is found, and then people set out to write rules that forever eradicate a very unlikely event at a cost for the rest of the design community.
Yeah, I mean, root cause failure analysis is a multidisciplinary approach, right? So you need your materials engineers, you need your rotor dynamicist or your dynamicist, you need your aerodynamicist, because from the outset, you really don't know what it is that caused it. And if you just use a single guy, a rotor dynamicist, he'll sure find a cause that is rotor dynamic failure. Or if you use a materials guy, he will find something that's materials related. So it's multidisciplinary. And I kind of want to go back to what Rainer just said, which is really important. We have as an industry over the last, you know, 70, 80 years, we've had that tendency to, when something goes wrong, rather than trying to understand the physics of it and really dig deep into, you know, what is the physics of why something happened, is kind of just make up some new rules, design rules to, and that's, you know, explainable and excusable because of, you know, sometimes you really don't understand the physics because it's very complicated. But so then you end up with not just design requirements and design rules, but very often these design requirements and rules make it into our industry standards. So if you look at, you know, API standards, they've grown from, you know, let's say API 616 for gas turbines, that's grown from something that used to be maybe 30 or 40 pages long in the 1960s and 70s to something that's now 300 pages long. And it's pretty much unmanageable when nobody reads it anymore because it's so long and nobody understands it. And you've really moved from a standard to a specification, taken away a lot of flexibility in the design process for new machines. So you also have to be very, very careful with that when you go and do a root cause failure analysis, that you don't over constrict yourself based on your findings for future operation and or future designs.
So is it worth breaking down, you know, the various methods that are used with root cause analysis, like failure analysis techniques and analytical tools?
We can talk about that a little bit. I mean, okay. Basically, there is two ways that, and you can argue with the root cause failure analysis experts of the world about this. There's two ways of looking at it. One is you start broad and you work your way to the inside, or you start on the inside and you work your way to the outside. The first one is basically you have a failure and you assemble a multidisciplinary team, your materials guys, rotor dynamicists, aerodynamicists, and you basically list every single possible failure mechanism that could have led to this, and or combinations of failure mechanisms, and then you work your way in there. That's often called a fishbone kind of approach, where basically you start on the outside with the different paths, and you kind of work. You say it ends up looking like a fishbowl, and that's kind of one approach. The other approach that some people take, and you can't really say it's wrong or better or worse, is you start on the inside. You say, okay, we know what the symptom is that we have seen. We've seen a blade failure. Okay, so let's just start with a materials analysis and see what the materials analysis shows. And maybe the materials analysis then shows high cycle fatigue. And then you work your way from the inside to the outside, saying, okay, what are the potential ways that you could have had high cycle fatigue? That could be aerodynamic, that could be a rotor. And so then you go to the outside with that and try to find your way to the outside by then saying, okay, this was aerodynamically induced. Why is it aerodynamically induced? Well, maybe you have some unstable combustion in the gas turbine, and so it's aerodynamically induced. Or maybe you have some blockage because an inlet guide vane or something like this broken off. So those are generally the two approaches. And there is a lot of beautiful charts and graphics that you can generate in the process. But overall, those are kind of the two different approaches. You work your way from the outside, very broad, to the inside, or from the inside to the outside, starting with the details and working. And you really can find the failure. If you have a good team of people, you can find it either way.
Yeah, in a way, this is a bit like a detective story. You know, you find something failed, aka the dead body, and then you gather evidence. One of the key things, by the way, in root cause failure analysis is that you not only gather evidence, but you also document evidence. One of the key problems when these reports are written, you have a failure in whatever 2015. And you do root cause failure analysis, and a lot of these failures don't happen a lot. So the next one that's similar may be 10 years later. And if you haven't documented what you've done for the first one, you will not be able to use this as a starting point or as a way of documenting that this happens more often than one. So documentation of the evidence and the findings and the methods is actually one of the key parts of root cause failure analysis.
Yeah, and we even call it, when we talk about for root cause failure analysis, we even call it forensics. So, I mean, there's guidelines out there for machinery failure forensics, kind of helping you along as to, how do you preserve evidence? When you collect blades, don't clean up any dirty surfaces, don't properly store all your pieces. Because just like as Renner said in the murder investigation, if you destroy the evidence, there's no way to get it back, right? Once you, let's say you expect to or you think you're going to have erosion on a blade, and if you don't have that leading edge that shows erosion on that blade anymore because you cleaned it up or something, then it's, not going to have that evidence anymore. So the forensics is always the first part. Is once the failure happened, you got to have a sterile area where you basically you send your team and you collect the evidence. The same is, by the way, has to do with operational data. You want to interview your operators. You want to ask questions. Hey, have you done anything in the last week, days, months, years that's different than what you did before? You want to look at your historical trending of your data acquisition and control system to see, did you see any higher vibrations, higher temperatures, higher something from your instrumentation. So having historical data available is very, very valuable, because obviously you're going to look for differences. As the first thing is, you're going to look at, this machine ran fine for 6 or 7 years and suddenly it failed. Could be two things. It could be because it just failed after 6 or 7 years and all the failure accumulated, or it could be you did something wrong and then it failed very suddenly. Again, all of this you hopefully will get out of your root cause failure analysis. But there is cases where you just don't get an answer, And you can't force it completely either. If you don't know the answer, then we sometimes, as human beings, have the tendency to fantasize and then make up a root cause failure analysis, or your boss demands an answer. And that's just as bad as having the no answer at all, because if you get the wrong answer, then you're going to make the mistakes again.
There is one thing actually that is often overlooked with the failure analysis. You know, so machine shuts down with something. And what usually happens is then the people first on site are maintenance people who may start to disassemble the machine or try certain fixes. The problem is, especially the disassembly part, is then when the people who actually do the failure analysis finally get around, a lot of the findings are already destroyed by essentially disassembling the machine in usually a expedient manner. So there is a bit of I'd call it a cultural thing within companies, how you actually approach certain failures first, so to give essentially a chance to do a reasonable failure analysis.
I recommend most companies that their operators take a class on root cause failure analysis, because that's exactly thing. You have a tendency, something failed, you jump on it, you want to rip it apart and you want to fix it as quickly as possible, but that's not going to help you if you have that same failure again 3 months later, right? So understanding the failure cause and taking a little more time, and also assembling a team of experts in the various fields. So, you know, I mentioned aerodynamicists, but also somebody on control, somebody who can read vibrations. All of that is important. And sometimes it takes a little longer and it becomes costly, but nothing is as costly as another failure, right? So even if your root cause failure analysis costs you a couple hundred K, that's still not going to be as costly as having to replace a machine that costs several million dollars. So it is worth spending the money on a proper root cause failure analysis. And the other thing is, sometimes, you know, it is worthwhile bringing an independent team in. There is a number of companies out there that specialize in root cause failure analysis. And sometimes it's good to bring these outsiders in, because they may look at it from a less biased perspective. If you have your own operator, you know, look at the failure, they will obviously tend to not try to identify a failure mode that implicates themselves. So it is probably worthwhile often to bring in a third party for a root cause failure analysis if you really want the true answer.
Now, I also would like to point out one thing. When you disassemble the machine, what you often see is, okay, somebody takes the thing apart. Now you have bits and pieces lying around. After the fact, you won't be able to exactly determine how they were arranged or aligned relative to each other. So it's for example, also a very good habit to take as many photos as possible before you do assemble and disassemble thing. So gathering of the evidence that we talked about is not just the job of the team that does the root cause failure analysis. It really, and that's probably one of the key messages, it really starts much earlier with the people, basically with the first responders to whatever the failure or the problem is.
Yeah. I mean, one of the first things you want to do is a borescope and properly document by going inside the machine. Then as you rip it apart, take as many photos as you can and actually write down what you photographed, because sometimes it's also funny. You look at a photograph of a blade and later nobody remembers where that thing came from, right? So that's not helpful at all. Then you especially if you have blade failures in, let's say, an axial compressor, you know, you want to know what failed first, because that tells you, very often you have then secondary failures if you have a blade in the second will fail, and then everything downstream of that is corn-cobbed. It's good to know where it started.
Are there specific actions that should be taken or not taken based on the results of a root cause analysis?
If it's clearly identifiable what the cause was, and this is physics based, right? Meaning that you have understood the physics and what caused it, then you should certainly implement rules or restrictions or design changes that keep that from happening again. I mean, let's say you used a coating and that coating started cracking, or you you used a material and that material started eroding in the environment that it was, or in your fuel you had something that attacked the base material, or you had a link in the guide vane that broke off. All of these then give you clear things that you can do to keep this from happening again. And when that happens, then you should restrict yourself from causing this to happen again. Unfortunately, in many cases, it's not that clear. You're like, okay, I don't know if the IGV failure was the excitation mechanism to that blade, or if that blade would have failed anyway because it was poorly designed, or it was eroded or corroded away. And so that's then sometimes the where you have to be a little careful, because you can then over-restrict yourself as to what you do, and actually, you know, throw out the baby with the bathwater by ending up with restricting yourself so much that you don't end up having a widely operating or a well-operating machine anymore. So some of this is judgment call and experience, but one also has to be careful not to over assess an issue and then over-restrict what comes out of the findings.
Part of this whole process is a discussion on how likely it is that the same failure happens again. I mean, if in the root cause analysis, and that's actually one of the strengths, you basically are able to identify, okay, so problem A caused, together with problem B and problem C, caused that failure. So that's something you can find out from your root cause failure analysis. If the three events are extremely unlikely, and therefore the fact that all three events happen at the same time or to the same machine are extremely unlikely, then you really have to ask yourself, okay, what is my corrective action going to cost me? And of course, the discussion is very different whether you, for example, do a root cause failure analysis on a nuclear reactor, or whether you do a root cause failure analysis on a pump that you bought for whatever, $30,000 or so, and that is basically an off-the-shelf item.
Yeah. I mean, there's basically a severity index, right? I mean, if the failure is catastrophic and risks the life of people or other facilities, or there's potential for fire or toxic gas release or stuff like this, then that's a very, very relevant and high impact factor. There's other things where, okay, well, if you have a failure here, then you may lose 3 or 4% efficiency on a compressor. That's not good, right? And you want to do something about it eventually, but you may even be able to continue running. Sometimes, unfortunately, if you lose that 3%, that may be an indication that something is slowly starting to go wrong, and then it's going to end up being catastrophic. So a lot of that has to do with you actually having to understand what your machine does, rather than just blindly acting on, oh, something's happening here. So some of this is a little bit of a judgment call, and hopefully that judgment call is based on real experience, but also based on understanding the physics of the machine itself.
All right, that wraps up our discussion on root cause analysis. Thank you both for coming on the podcast today.
Very much enjoyed being on this again and looking forward to the next one.
Yeah, this was very pleasant. Thank you so much for organizing it.
And thank you to our listeners for tuning into this episode of the TurboTime podcast. I'm your host, Alyssa Espinoza, and we will see you next time.